Good day, Crime Talk aficionados. This is Scott Reich from Crime Talk. Thanks for tuning in. First on the docket, the professional poker player homicide case update with details. A cold case solved with an unusual ending. Philadelphia, you will always be number one in my heart. Just keep doing what you're doing. Fourth, not the first day of class that people were expecting. Why can't people just get along? And finally, our dumb criminal contestant of the day. Let's talk about it. Good day, Crime Talk aficionados. This is Scott Reich from Crime Talk. Thanks for watching. First, if you haven't done so already, I'd ask that you hit that subscribe button. Hit that little bell so that you receive notifications of when we go live or put up new content. And as always, leave me a comment below about the cases we discuss here today. Now, I want to thank everyone for tuning in for our live show as well as our Patreon program last night. I enjoyed it. I hope you did as well. First on the docket, professional poker player case update. Last week, we brought you the case of a professional poker player whose charred body was found in a Michigan park last month and was bound and was sexually assaulted before she was burned alive. That's according to new reports. Cell phone records suggest that Susie Zhao met a gentleman by the name of Jeffrey Morris at the Sherwood Motel in Waterford, Michigan Township. This took place on July 12th. Now, Morris is a convicted sex offender and claims when he spoke with police that he met Zhao on Watkins Lake Road and they both checked into the Sherwood Motel at about 9:26 p.m. Morris allegedly told police at some point they left the motel to purchase alcohol. He also said that Zhao left the motel around midnight and took all of her belongings, including her cell phone. An investigation has revealed that Zhao's cell phone didn't leave the motel until 5 a.m. What have we talked about those cell phones? It's amazing the information that you can retrieve from them. The phone records reportedly show Morris left around the same time and drove to a secluded spot in the Pontiac Lake recreational area. He was apparently there, according to cell phone records, for 7 minutes. The police believe that Zhao was killed sometime after 11:45 p.m. on July 12th. Her charred remains were found on July 13th in the park, located near the Pontiac Lake State Reservoir. Fingerprints were used to identify Zhao as the decedent. Court documents stated that Zhao was bound with zip ties, sexually assaulted with a large object before being lit on fire until she passed away. Investigators who searched Morris's car reportedly found foot impressions, hair, and miscellaneous fibers in the car. There's also reports that a duffel bag containing Morris's identification, a bedsheet with a possible bloodstain, and a baseball bat that also had a sizable bloodstain was obtained as well. Now, Morris is a Tier 3 sex offender in Michigan and was convicted in 1989 for third-degree criminal sexual conduct, force, or coercion. He was charged with first-degree premeditated murder in connection with Zhao's death. Obviously, Mr. Morris will receive the presumption of innocence, as we will for anyone that we discuss on this case, until and if they plead guilty or are convicted by a jury. Zhao has been known in the professional poker circuit as Susie Q. She lived in Los Angeles and recently moved back to Michigan to be with her parents in early June. Authorities are not releasing any kind of motive, but they are unsure if Zhao's murder is connected to gambling in other states. It's also unclear as to why Zhao had met Morris. Zhao is 33 and Morris is 60 years of age. Somehow I don't think that he was her type, but you never know. We'll continue to follow this case and see where the facts lead us. The Zhao case is definitely one that begs people to be careful with whom they're dealing with. And if we've mentioned before, there's one way to find out with whom you are dealing with. Go to crimetalksearch.com, sign up for a background subscription service, And as you wait, you can have information about one's social media history, cell phones, as well as their criminal history, including sex offender registration. You'll also have information regarding property records and bankruptcies. And the best thing about it, you can search literally millions and millions of records that are available in the United States anonymously, and you can do it as many times as you want. Go to crimetalksearch.com. You'll be happy and satisfied that you did. Next on the docket, a cold case was solved with a somewhat unfortunate ending. Investigators in Atlanta have used genetic genealogy to close the cold case of a young woman by the name of Jessica Bagan, who had been sexually assaulted and murdered after she celebrated her 17th birthday in 1996. The suspect, a gentleman by the name of Steve Branch, 66, died by suicide last week after state police investigators traveled to his home in Austin, Arkansas, to interview him about Bagan's murder in the city of Sitka, which is southwest of Juneau, Alaska. According to the authorities, when they requested a DNA sample from Mr. Branch, he denied any involvement and denied a DNA sample. 30 minutes after the officers left to get a warrant, Branch died by suicide. Now, suicide is the ultimate consciousness of guilt, and that's what the police indicated. They stated that Branch will never face a jury of his peers in this case, but they're satisfied they can finally say that Jessica's case has been solved. Bagan had vanished on May 4th of 1996 after she left a birthday party at her sister's house to walk home. Her body, which was found 2 days later, had been buried in the woods. 9 days after that, a man contacted local police and confessed to sexually assaulting her, but no physical evidence linked him to the crime, and he was later acquitted at trial. In 2018, cold case investigators submitted a suspect DNA sample taken from Bagan's body and uploaded it into a public genealogy database. Eventually, Branch emerged as a suspect. He lived in Sitka when Bagan was murdered, and he had been indicted and acquitted in the sexual assault of another local teenager around the same time as Bagan's killing. He moved to Arkansas in 2010. Following Branch's August 3rd death, scientists were able to match the DNA obtained from his body during an autopsy to the suspect's DNA. Case closed. Ladies and gentlemen, this genetic genealogy has solved so many cases recently, and literally what it means is there's probably going to be no case that will not ultimately be solved if there is in fact DNA evidence. That's good for everyone. Next on the docket, Philadelphia, you're number one in my book. You just keep doing what you're doing, and you'll get there soon enough. Philadelphia ranks second in the nation in the number of homicides so far this year, just behind Chicago. Now, these statistics were provided by the Philadelphia Police Commissioner, Danielle Outlaw. What a great name for somebody in law enforcement. As of July 26, homicides in Philadelphia had jumped 32% to 247 compared to the same period a year earlier. Outlaw told city council members at a hearing on gun violence. Philadelphia's violent crime and homicides are rising sharply as they are around the country. Philadelphia's 32% increase in homicides was smaller than in 10 other cities, which included Minneapolis, which surged 85%. Fort Wayne, Indiana saw a 58% increase, according to the information provided by Outlaw. Chicago, which has seen a series of shootings recently, ranks number one in homicides. That's right, 433 homicides, a 52% increase from a year earlier. New York, a close third with a 29% increase with 227 homicides to date. In Philadelphia, three children per week on average have been shot this year, according to the police data. Apparently, Outlaw said the top issue that she has is to stop gun violence. So she believes that she can do that by trying to stop existing rivalries between gangs and other groups, because apparently there's competition for territory to sell drugs. Beefs between individuals and a rise in the likelihood for individuals to carry firearms. So, if I understand that correctly, what she's saying is that people committing illegal acts, i.e. being associated with gangs and things that go with it, like robbery, thefts, drug dealing, are shooting each other over drug territory, which would make one conclude that perhaps they are not going to call the police, or that the police simply aren't going to these areas any longer. Needless to say, Philadelphia, you may be number two statistically, but you're going to be number one soon. I can feel it. Not the first day of class that everyone was expecting. That's right. The first day of school for a Florida elementary schooler turned deadly when the student's mother was shot during an online class. The elementary school teacher at Warfield Elementary witnessed her 10-year-old student react to her mother getting shot as class, which was being held over Zoom, because obviously the novel coronavirus pandemic had begun. Donald Williams, 27, was taken into custody on Tuesday under suspicion of murdering his ex-girlfriend and the student's mother, Maribel Rosado Morales. There were reportedly six children inside the home. Rosado Morales' four children, including the 10-year-old girl who was online, and two of their cousins when Williams arrived around 8 a.m. One of the children, 10 years old, is online, getting ready to start the day. It's early, 8 o'clock, according to the police officials. And then Williams opens fire. Williams allegedly gave a full confession and will face a first-degree murder charge. The teacher told authorities that she heard a commotion, heard profanity, realized it was some sort of domestic altercation, and so she hit the mute button so that no one else could hear. Then she says that she saw the 10-year-old put her hands up to her ears. She then said that the student's portion of the Zoom call went blank almost immediately after the child put her hands up in the airs because her computer had been struck by a bullet. Now, the police officer said something that I have said myself. I've learned through the decades of doing things that when you think you've seen everything, you haven't. Obviously, we'll continue to give Mr. Williams the presumption of innocence, but when you confess to the police like that, it's going to be tough to convince a jury otherwise for sure. Next on the docket, why can't we all just get along? Take a look at this video. This young gentleman, Andrew Golden, apparently has filed a complaint against Tennessee State Trooper Harvey Briggs. It is alleged by Golden that Briggs allegedly accosted him, ripped off his face mask, and he did this because he was recording a traffic stop at a safe distance. You can see from the video that the police officer was telling Mr. Golden not to interfere with the recording of the police officer. Mr. Golden tells the police officer that he can record. He's doing what he wants. But of course, there's disrespect. If everyone had just acted with a little respect toward each other, perhaps none of this would have happened. Now, Trooper Briggs is more than likely facing disciplinary action, and Mr. Golden gets his 15 minutes of fame. Trooper Golden, we get it. Sometimes there's bad days. Sometimes you're dealing with individuals that you believe are punks, but you, sir, have to treat everyone with dignity and respect. That's your job, even when the guy's being a jerk. But he can record what's taking place out on the street. Trooper Briggs, let it go. Let it go. Next on the docket, where was our dumb criminal contestant of the day yesterday? Well, we certainly know he wasn't watching Crime Talk, because if he did, he would have learned, don't return to the scene of the crime. That's right. Matthew James McNichols, 48, was arrested and charged with possession of heroin and possession of drug paraphernalia after he went back to a convenience store where he allegedly stole beef jerky and some bottled water just hours before. When Mr. McNichols returned back to the convenience store, the clerks called the police saying that the man had returned. Once the police made contact with Mr. McNichols, they pulled him over in his car, whereupon they found the drug paraphernalia, which resulted in an arrest and a further search of Mr. McNichols and his automobile, whereupon they found the heroin along with the stolen beef jerky. The beef jerky that had been liberated was returned back to the convenience store, and the heroin and the drug paraphernalia were booked into evidence to be held there until such times as Mr. McNichol's case proceeds for hearing. Ladies and gentlemen, Mr. McNichols is our dumb criminal contestant of the day. If he had been watching yesterday, this would not have happened. Thanks for watching. Have a great day. We'll see you tomorrow on Crime Talk.